for members only. Golf Smarter number 444, published on July 8, 2014, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
PGA Tour caddy for J.B. Holmes, Brandon Parsons.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Brandon.
Hey, Fred. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Where are you?
Right now, I'm between Campbellsville and Bowling Green, Kentucky. And I'm just going down to talk a little bit about target-oriented golf and aim-point golf and a way to communicate information to the player. Right now, I caddy. So my brother is an instructor, Tyler Parsons, an instructor at Old Stone. So I'm heading down to Old Stone Country Club in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
And how much of your life is spent on the road?
A great amount. I travel just with work. About 30 weeks, plus or minus a few weeks, about 30 weeks with to tour events. And then while I'm home, sometimes I schedule some time like today to try to, just advance my learning in regards to golf. So I've got a few days here before the British Open, and I'm just using this time to try to brush up on some things, green-oriented, just reading greens.
Oh.
Try to get a few more putts to fall in.
Okay. Well, we'll definitely talk about aim point putting, and because Colin Cromack was on the show just a few weeks ago talking about target-oriented golf, that's how you and I got together. So I'm going to want to focus and talk a lot about target-oriented golf from your perspective. But if you don't mind me asking, I'm just fascinated. You've been on the tour this year with J.B. Holmes. And caddying for him. Is this your first year caddying for JB?
No, I started caddying in 2008. So I had caddied for JB, and just like we grew up playing golf together, and sometimes we would take turns caddying for each other. So we very much know each other's games. And he had me come out just to a couple of random tour events. I think it was at Funai in Florida when he was on tour in like 06. And I started full-time in 08, and we've really enjoyed it. Had quite a bit of success. I took some time to play in late 2012, first part of 2013, and then he asked me to come back, so I was happy to come back, get back to work with him. We've had a great year, 2014. I think he's made just over $2 million. So.
The last time I checked, it looked like it was just over $2 million, and you still have quite a way to go in the season.
Yeah, we still have quite a season left, so we're just trying to hone in on some little ways to get better, some things we can do. Even at this level, it's great to always feel like you can get a little bit better, and I think that's what draws us to golf. Even if you go out and shoot 18 under, there was still, you're like, man, that one left on the edge, maybe it was for a hole in one, but that's crazy. That's what the mind does. You never seem to be happy. You always feel like you can strive for just to get a little better, and perfection never happens.
It's amazing. Let me take that back. I've met one golfer in my life that said he was a good golfer. I've never met anybody say, are you a good golfer? Like, I'm okay, But, my barber, he was like, oh, yeah, I'm good. I'm a good golfer. Yeah. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
I've never heard anybody say that before. It's really amazing. But like you see.
And then you want to go play with your barber and see what he thinks is good. You know what I mean? Because there's so many different levels.
I have no interest in playing with this guy because I don't want him to start giving me lessons on the course. I just have a feeling he's going to start telling me what I'm doing wrong, and I have no interest in that whatsoever.
Yeah, I understand.
But it's like, you go out and play with somebody, and they say, so are you a good golfer? I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. I'm shooting in the mid-80s right now. I'm like, wow, you're really good. And it's like, but then if you, from his perspective, I always kind of see shooting in the 80s as kind of like turning 60. You know, it's when you're 60, you're old to young people and you're young to old people. Right?
Yeah. And when you're, I'm starting to know, again, I mean, if you want to get away from score, I'm starting to notice that I would call anyone that can be on the golf course and hitting shots and playing and keeping score, if it looks like they're enjoying it, so you see them smiling, I would call them a good golfer. Somehow they've managed to hear you're keeping score, and obviously you're not going to hit a perfect shot every time, so you deal with the frustration in a happy way. So anybody that can do that, in my mind, I'm starting to see, because I see guys, you know, at pro-ams and even on the tour where it just looks like they're not enjoying it. They've lost the understanding of that this is a game. So
I love that.
I think that goes along with being present and just seeing the golf course, and that gets us back again to target-oriented golf.
Yeah. No, I like that. It's like if you're having fun, then you're a good golfer. Why not?
Right. Like my little boy, I don't know, he's 5. And we go out, and he sees everything, you know, out there in the golf course. He has a blast. But,
yeah.
I mean, he shoots 150. If you ask him, he'll tell you he's a good golfer. You know?
Oh, I didn't realize.
But
you've got a 5-year-old, and you're on the road 30 weeks a year? That's got to be tough.
They come out with me just when we can make it happen. But my wife is very supportive, and it's been a really good ride, you know?
Yeah. Well, when the guy you're working for is generating over $2 million, you know, partway through the season, yeah, I think you should be supportive. I think she realizes you're having fun.
Yeah, she's good with that, but she realizes, you know, I'm lucky enough that I really love golf. I love gathering more information and learning, and that's what, you know, golf is my motivation to get to do that. And you know, I take walks every day. We're out on the course for four and a half hours with my best buddy, you know? So it's
well, your best buddy this year, his winnings, we've talked about enough, but he's had some tough years the last couple of years too. He wasn't even, did he not even get to compete for a while? He had some tough times.
He had some surgery, just the Chiari malformation, so he had some skull removed, which was very scary.
Oh.
And then he had a rollerblading accident, broken ankle, and then he's had some surgery on his elbow, and it's amazing. But again, he used it as motivation just to say, okay, I'm going to work out, I'm going to overcome all these things, and he's come out and want to get on tour, and I'm very proud of him.
I would think. Great. Well, being an old friend of his, if you guys grew up playing together and competing against one another, I got to imagine, and as a caddy, I've got to imagine there's been a lot of pep talks that come from you to get him back on track.
Yeah, just, you know, more it's just like, you know, you just want him to hang in there, because golf, like we just talked about, can be very frustrating. So we're just trying to get back to the enjoyment and why we love golf, and just every day, you know, just try to see the golf course and just noticing just little things, you know. You can play golf for a long time and never notice that there are any birds chirping on the golf course. So the day you've not heard any for 4 years and maybe you start hearing those, you know you're on the right track, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I've had a new discovery just recently. Two of the golf courses that I play in the county I live in are dog-friendly golf courses.
That's cool.
And so I have a little dog. I mean, she's only about 17 pounds, but she has been out with me 4 times now. And I'm like, look, if I'm going to have to take my dog for a walk and I walk the golf course, why don't I just bring the dog? And she's been awesome. And the friends that I play with, like when I bring her out, they're like, really? You're bringing your dog? And by the end of the round, they were so happy that she was there, because she's got this calming thing about her. You know, it's like when you're feeling frustrated or stuff, you go over and you snuggle and pet with the dog and you feel great.
Yeah, your dog doesn't care, you know, if you top a shot or hit it in the woods, or if you birdied a hole you've never made birdie on before, or hit your longest drive. I mean, she's enjoying being, it's like a park to dog, you know, so she's enjoying that experience from that point of view, which is what we should be doing. You know, I think we forget sometimes and get attached to the results and everything.
Yeah, well, but, I think that's maybe an episode that's an episode we're going to be doing soon, is how what your dog could teach you on the golf course.
That's very good.
But if you ever get the chance to take a dog out with you, you got to give it a try. It's really a lot of
fun. Oh, I have.
Oh, you have?
Growing up, yeah. I had a black lab growing up, and we took him to the golf course some, and their experience is just really opens your eyes. You know, you look around, you see the course differently.
You really do. But I live next to a golf course, and on July 4th holiday, just recently, somebody who lives on my block had company over and brought their dog with them, and the dog jumped over the fence onto the golf course, and the dog and these guys are looking around like, who's that? Wait a minute, what is this dog doing here? You can see these golfers were so frustrated, and the dog was one of those herding shepherds and was having so much fun, but every time a guy would take a shot, the dog would run down the fairway, pick up the ball, and bring it back.
Oh, no.
You can imagine these country club guys who just play the same course over and over again and play the same shot and play the same club at the same tee box and hit it in the same bunker every time, and they never change their game. With something like that, really rattled their cage. It was very funny to watch.
Exactly. It's two opposite energies conflicting, you know? That dog is just all about positive and having a blast. And you got people that, you know, like you just said, play the same game, they play the same course, and it's like they've never thought, well, you know, is it good? I'm always long of this green, and it's terrible back there. It's all downhill, or, you know, I don't like that chip. I wonder why they don't just hit a different club to a different spot, and go look and see where the good spot is, you know?
Yeah. Recently, Dave Stockton, we had a really great conversation, and he talked about how he took two clubs with him to every shot. He would never decide just based on the yardage. He would take two different clubs and decide for him, is it a high shot or a low shot? And he didn't make any decision until he was standing behind the ball and assessing exactly what he needed to accomplish before he decided which club to hit.
Yeah.
Which was a huge lesson for me.
The main thing, what I took away from him, is just using your imagination, just like we talked about with where you want your ball to be, just using your imagination more and seeing he takes two clubs because he's playing with the trajectory. So he just would rather, instead of trying to de-loft a 60-degree, everybody uses a 60-degree now, it seems, so instead of trying to de-loft that and force the club into doing a shot it's not really built for, he would just switch to a 56 or 54 or 9-iron, and then he can keep his body or his technique, if you will, whatever you want to call that. He doesn't have to change him. He just changed the tool to match the trajectory that he has in his imagination, you know, which is awesome.
Right. Spectacular. Well, when you're traveling, so now you're traveling by car, but during, you know, in between tournaments and stuff, you're flying with JB all the time, though, right?
No, we travel separately. So if it's 10 hours, if I can work it out so that I can get home, because if I can drive, then I have more freedom. You know, I don't have to wait on a flight or rush to a flight. I just don't like the experience, really, going through airports and having to be somewhere at a certain time. So if I can drive, it's 10 hours away, or just depending on, you know, if we're going to do 4 weeks in a row, if we're going to do four in a row, I'll fly. But if I can find a way to drive, I try to drive. But we fly separately. We're going to fly to the British Open. We are going to do that together. Then we'll come home, be home a week, and then we'll be heading to Akron for the Firestone and then the PGA, and then we'll get ready for the playoffs. And we'll do several in a row in the playoffs. So looking forward to all those events.
Yeah, I bet. Good luck on those. When you fly separately, do you mean he flies first class and you fly coach, or he flies charter and you fly commercial, or you take different planes?
Yeah, different. We're on different airplanes usually because...
Why?
I'm flying home, or maybe I've scheduled a different flight. We're just each responsible for our own travel.
Interesting.
Now, there are times, like, he did have a deal in the past where maybe he had some private planes. I mean, if he's flying privately or something like that, he's taking me along, and, you know, I'm grateful for that. It's awful. It's just a matter of we just schedule our own flights. And here recently, he's been flying just commercial a lot more. So.
Hmm. Well, I think you just gave me the perfect opportunity to bring in our sponsor for this show, and because if you're spending all that time in the car, buddy, you need to check out audible.com, because this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Audible wants to give the Golf Smarter community an opportunity to try it for free. Get a free audiobook of your choice from their enormous library when you sign up for an account. Your first one's going to be free. Now, do you listen to audiobooks when you're on the road, or do you know
if
JB?
I don't personally, but JB and I have talked about it. He's been listening to more and more audiobooks, which is, you know, it's great. So we talked about just some audiobooks and things that he's listened to. And I think it'll be great because I don't have to take, you know, now with today's technology, you don't have to have a book with you and you know, just come on your iPhone and on the flight or in the car. So that would be great.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's true. You download stuff automatically right down to your iPhone. I know that you and I are talking on your cell phone right now on your iPhone. I actually just took a driving trip down from the San Francisco area down to Los Angeles, and found an 8-hour book that took me there and back, and it was a really fun book. I really enjoyed it. It's called 10% Happier: How I Tamed the Voice in My Head, Reduced Stress Without Losing My Edge, and Found a Self-Help That Actually Works. And it's written by this guy named Dan Harris. Now, he was the Nightline anchor, and he's worked for ABC Network, and he had a panic attack live on television while he was doing a newscast on Good Morning America. And so he realized at that point that he had to make some changes. He's a non-believer. He found himself in a very bizarre situation. And then ABC made him their religious reporter. And he was like, why am I covering religion? I don't make it. But he just went on this self-help exploration, and he found a way to tame his voice. And it's interesting because while I was listening to it, and he talked about meditation, he talked about mindfulness, it resonated to me because so much of what I have talked about on Golf Smarter really is kind of mindfulness. And that is all that is being present, being in the moment. And so many instructors, so many mental coaches that we've had on the show talk about being in the moment, focusing on the process and not about the outcome. And Dan Harris talks about how all of this work for him made him 10% happier. And it's a really entertaining book because there's so many stories, especially if you like media, and get his background in turning Diane Sawyer onto meditation, that kind of stuff. It's a great book to check out. So that could be your first book if you want to try it. Again, it's called 10% Happier by Dan Harris. And that book could be yours for free. All you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Audible is AUDIBLE. audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Your first book is going to be free when you sign up. And if after a few months or after that first book, after the first month, if you don't want to continue, you don't have to. But you have so many different topics you can choose from. And it's a great way to consume content, whether you're driving, flying, working out, on the driving range, whatever you're doing, Audible and audiobooks. And if you listen to podcasts, you understand the value of doing audio content. So we really appreciate their support of the Golf Smarter podcast. Again, get that free book at audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. And yeah. And there's a lot of great golf books too. Great stories that I've listened to while driving and working out and walking my dog. So you should definitely check them out. and tell JB about it too.
Yeah, I will. Like I said, I think he actually uses that already. So,
well, there you go. Take it from him.
Yeah.
Take it from JB Holmes.
Yeah, so that's great. 10% happier and just mindfulness and being present. And that's exactly what target-oriented golf is about. And what, you know, what Colin has figured out how to do is just basically give somebody. So it's easy to say, okay, be mindful. And it's easy to say, okay, be present. But now how do you, okay.
Right.
How do I do that? What does that look like? And so he has actually studied, you know, the brainwave patterns and everything of what the brainwaves look like when they're in the, when someone is in the zone. That, you know, when you talk about, I was in the zone and it's that, okay, why don't you just get back to the zone? Why do you fall out of the zone? Why does that happen? I'm a golfer and it's happened to me. And it's like, how do you put your finger on that? So that's what he has, you know, developed a way to just basically do that. And he calls it target-oriented golf. And it makes sense because the easiest way to do it is just by finding a specific target. And it can be anything that you enjoy looking at that is in the picture of where you would like to hit the golf ball. So let's say you're standing on a tee box and, you know, there's this panoramic view, but you're not necessarily looking in the trees to the left of the fairway. You're looking somewhere through the fairway. There'll be something that just stands out. And on tour, it's everywhere. There's a specific tree. It's like the architect put it there on purpose. Every hole, we have that. And I found when I play other places, every hole has that. There's something that stands out. It's like God put it there for you to look at. The architect, you know, whoever built the golf course, whatever it is, that's where you should be looking to hit this shot. And that's what you should be thinking about while you swing. Not your golf swing, not what you're going to tell your friends, not that this is going to be your longest tee shot of the day, not that you're down four in your match, not that you're up four in your match. Think about the target every time on the driving range and the event of your life. And that is the breakdown that happens when people are playing golf, you know? And it's simple to explain once you understand, in my opinion, once you understand what Colin's talking about with target-oriented golf. But it's not necessarily easy to do because you keep falling into this trap of being results-oriented, like you just said, and going past future and letting your mind just run amok. So, you know, I said before to someone, you either control your mind or it's going to control you. And everybody goes up to the golf course and they let their mind control them. And you can tell it's controlling them because they don't seem to be enjoying golf very much. They'll come back and play again tomorrow or next weekend. They like it enough because they hit that one shot. They're hooked. They hit that shot. They know they can do. And they keep saying, why can't I do that every time? Right? You're a golfer.
Mm-hmm.
So
you have worked with Colin. You've studied with Colin, or you just like the concept that he's been doing?
You know, So I got together with Colin just basically, I'd played in some events, and I'd been away from competition golf for a while. So the first thing that happened, I knew that anticipated events, anything that you're looking forward to for a long time and you practice for, and that's what you're thinking about when you're practicing, right? That's how I used to practice. Oh, I've got this event. I'm going to do well. You're practicing your putt. You're thinking about that. So that's the future. You're not being in the present when you practice. Then that event happens. And it's impossible to be in the present at that time. You haven't really practiced being in the present. And then you don't get the results you wanted, and you're like, what? You know, I practice. I spent all these hours practicing golf. And so I knew I had a problem that no one had really. It was the first time I knew it was a problem. I went to a Q-School event and just hit, you know, I was playing well, and just hit this shot off the mat, and it's not like me. I hit it in the water, you know, left. I guess you would call it a double cross. I've never really hit that kind of shot before. And I thought, I knew that in my mind, had just gotten away from me. So I just started looking for anybody, you know, just anybody I could find online, basically. And there was target-oriented golf, and I read about it. And on his website, he was describing what exactly what I thought my problem was. And then he had these before and after shots. And you could tell a difference. I couldn't tell what the difference was. And so I got a hold of, just through, actually, Aimpoint, Golf Donaldson in the UK. I said, hey, you know, this guy's actually just worked with that caller. So he put us in touch. introduced us, and I started talking to him. And our first conversation, I mean, he called and explained to me exactly what my problem was. And I talked to him every week for the next few weeks, and we just talked about target-oriented golf, and I would send him videos of me doing it. And, yeah, you know, I came to an understanding of exactly what he was talking about and was able to put it in practice. And more importantly, I'm able to, from a caddy standpoint, help the player focus on the things that we need to focus on. You know what I mean? Which is the target. We practice with the target, and we play then with the target. So now we're able to practice more closely instead of worrying about the swing so much. I mean, again, it's a trap that comes up, right? But you'll find, for the weekend golfers out there, you'll find that if when you spend time practicing or you're thinking at home about the target, like a hole that you saw, if you knew what your target was, that's different than just knowing that there was a fairway there and you had no idea really what you were swinging at. You're trying to hit the ball in the fairway and you were thinking about maybe your release or maybe your weight shift or maybe somebody told you got to make sure this elbow is here or that. That's totally different experience than thinking about the target and reacting to the target. Totally different. And you'll know what I'm talking about when you reflect back. Maybe you're cooking dinner later and you can go through the holes. And every hole, if you had a target, and there will be, at first when you start doing this, target-oriented golf, there will be holes that you slip up, and you'll realize, oh, I don't know what my target was there. And when you get really good at it, you start catching it when you step into your shot, and when your mind, you start trying to paint the picture when you make your golf swing, what that target is. And when you can't do it, it's because you don't have one, because you never really saw one. You're just swinging the club at nothing. And then you wonder why you don't get the results you want. So they kind of go together. We're talking about being present, not being result-oriented. And we're talking about enjoyment of golf. And let's call golf what it is. You're outside with friends or people you like to at least be around. You're at a park, basically. You've got land set aside that is groomed. Of course, it's known as beautiful. Birds, water, ducks, you know, all these beautiful things. And you've got these picturesque views that you can look at. And I'm saying just start looking at them, because everybody looks down at the ground and see this white ball. And then that's the frustration. I'm saying look up and find the target and put that in your mind. And the enjoyment comes, and then you start feeling like that, the story you just talked about with the dog. I mean, he's having a blast out there. He doesn't know. Just having a good time on the golf course. And then you can say, I'm a good golfer. And your scores won't reflect it, but it won't be in the score. That won't be why you know you're good. You'll know you're good if you enjoyed the time you spent out there with your friends.
On the target concept, am I picking a spot that I want the ball to land on? Am I picking, like you were saying, a tree in the distance that I want my ball flight to follow? I'm looking that. Give me specifics, because I know that sometimes I'll look at a spot on the fairway. And I'll focus on that spot on the fairway, and then when I get, you know, and then I bring my head back, and all of a sudden, now that I'm looking at the ball, I start thinking about, okay, make sure my elbow doesn't fly out, make sure that my weight shift is correct. Right. You know, I'll get lost in that, and then I hear myself, but don't forget where you're trying to hit the ball. So there's too many things obviously going on in my head at once. But I get lost on whether I'm, you know, focusing on a landing spot or a ball flight. Or are they mutually exclusive? Or are they the same thing?
Well, yeah, so on the tee box, most often what I will talk about is there will be, if you're playing somewhere that has trees. So I'm usually looking at a certain color tree or a trunk. Maybe there's a crooked trunk. Maybe there's a tree that makes a Y. So your ball would never get to that tree. That might be through the fairway on the line. That would be anywhere on that line would be good. So maybe the cover to get to the fairway is like 220, and then your run out to go into the rough on the other side is like 330. You with me? So we have a line created, and you can draw into that line, you can fade into that line, but you're wanting the ball to end somewhere on that line. But it can never get to that tree because that tree is 400 yards away or 450 yards away maybe, or maybe it's 330 yards away. So there's this picture, and then if I took a picture with a camera and then brought it to you, I would circle in a red pen, hey,
you know, on this line, I can show you, on this line, if you hit it towards this tree, you have to hit it 220 yards to get to the fairway, or 200 yards to get to the fairway, and then 333. Now, if those numbers don't work for you, if you can't hit it 220 yards, you need to have a different target. You with me?
Yes.
This means we would shift it over to where you can reach the fairway and say, okay. So if I'm describing a target for my wife, who's just beginning golf, I describe, I'm like, hey, do you see that, you know, there's this tree or this group of pines. Now, my target sometimes is way left closer to the green, you know, and I find something that I like to think about. She may not ever see. We're playing the same golf course, but she would never see what I'm necessarily looking at. And I would never look, when I'm playing golf, I would never necessarily look where she's looking. But it needs to be something. It can be a bird on a tree. You know, a bird might fly away, but a bird might direct you toward the tree you never saw before. So that's on the tee. Now, as we get closer to the hole, it can be that spot on the green. But there's a problem if you're picking a spot to land in the fairway. Well, what if your driver's going to go further than that? You know, so it's easier just to pick something up. And you want to, you know, that gets you in the track man. Everything is related, but track man number 30 to hit a ball far, you want to hit up, you know, plus 2 to 4 degrees and swing out. Well, so you want to be looking at something higher because you want to hit up on the driver. You want to catch it on the upswing, right, of your circle. Vice versa, chips, you're going to land somewhere short of the pin, so now, and if it's breaking to the left, your target will be short and to the right of the cup. And if you, and you can make your circle, depending on how good at golf, how much you can play, you can make your circle bigger so you can have a bigger target, or you can make it smaller, especially if you're playing well. Or if it's significantly downhill, maybe you have a small spot that's closer to you, and you just have to bump it. We've all done this. Just wonder where you were doing it. Maybe you're going to hit a little 9-iron, and it's a downhill right-to-left breaking, you know, 20 feet away. You're not trying to knock your 9-iron in the hole. No, you shift your target closer to you and further to the right, and you're like, if I just hit it to that spot, and the ball will funnel down to the hole. That moment, you were doing target-oriented golf. And most of the time, people are successful on those types of shots. It's just, I'm talking about expanding that thought all the way back to the tee and doing it every time. So in a sense, it can be a little bit boring, but it's not boring in that you get to see more of the golf course and you notice these things that were there all along. But most of the time, people are just looking at the golf ball and thinking about their golf swing. So then you don't get to enjoy the golf course.
Wow.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing. It was there all along, and most people have done it. You know, they just don't, they're not aware. So really, Colin has a systematic way of just becoming aware, and if you do that every day you practice and every day you play golf, you get better because you get feedback. When you miss your target, you don't have to go to the golf swing and think technically, oh, my face was open. You have a feeling. All of a sudden, your feelings get so big. Because your mind was only thinking about the target. And then you can adjust your feeling. And guess what? Your swing comes out looking just like TrackMan says it should, or just like the guys on tour. It takes time. I'm not saying you're gonna have your tour swing that you understand. And that is golf, actually. Knowing where the golf ball is going to go before you hit it, whether it's a fade or a draw, whatever it is. Once you can hit a 4-iron a different distance than a 7-iron, and then some sort of wood a little bit further than your 4-iron, you are playing golf. The next thing you want to do then is understand that uphill shots are easier in general than downhill shots because gravity will stop it. So then you are looking for places that you can get your ball around the green that you have an uphill chip or an uphill putt, and then you can start having lower scores. You know, so 18 over is 90. So if you're not breaking 90, you need to find some way. Where do you like to hit your shot from the fairway? Like if you're blocked out on the left, if it's dog leg left, you already know you don't want your target to be down the left unless you fade it. Maybe that's great. If you're going to hit a big slice, then you're going to the fat part of the fairway. So your target should be, you could start it on the left corner. There might be a tree that you love to swing at, and you can just wear it out. You can do your swing at that target. You know the ball's going to cut. You're playing golf now. Then you get to the next shot, you know you'll be short of the hole. Well, your 7-iron might get through the hole. Getting through the hole is bad because it's extremely downhill, so you choose an 8-iron, and you find a target that you like looking at, and you know it's going to fade. So maybe the front left of the green, there's a tree there's a green, maybe there's a cart path there. Everybody has seen these places I'm talking about, and they've done it. It's just being aware and starting to do it every time. Then you're playing golf. You 8-iron stay short, or maybe you hit a good, and it just creeps up. Now you have an uphill chip or an uphill putt. Chip up, two putt, that's a bogey. Chip up, make a putt, below the hole, you know what I'm saying? That's a par. And then just waiting for those opportunities where you're comfortable with every shot, and then you might make a birdie, you make a birdie putt. But those happen almost by accident. It's not like you purposely say, I'm going to birdie this hole. No, there's a plan you can put in place with targets that can lead you to a birdie. You know, but it's not just step up and work and just swing as hard as I can, you know, and think about releasing the club and think about this elbow. That's not going to lead you where you want to be. That's frustration.
And this is all a critical element of the pre-shot routine.
Correct. And what I really like about talking with Colin, you know, about the pre-shot routine is he intended to maybe stepping across a creek or, you know, climbing, rock climbing. Once you have a process that you're comfortable with, and it starts with you, and confirming, okay, you know, first thing, you need to be aware you're on a golf course. You want to be here, right? So you're going to enjoy the next 30, it needs to be enjoyment. This is where you've chosen to be. Then you're going to, what do I see before me? You know, oh, okay, there's a creek. Am I going over the creek, toward the creek? So you're making a decision, you know, on your club. Okay, we're going to go over the creek. We have 150 yards to the front. It's long good. From a caddy standpoint, I'm just telling you what I would do in a couple of seconds to help the player. You know, it might take me longer to explain, but you do this in a few seconds. Short this pin is better. You know, we have 20 yards to cover over the creek, so short's good. 150 front, so 9-iron gets to the front, and the pin's on 7, but we know short's okay. We could maybe chip it in, or, you know, we have an uphill shot, so we're going to choose a 9-iron. The wind is, you know, there's not much wind right now, and then you're going to find a target, okay? What is short left? When I look short left, what do I see? And there will be this tree trunk. All right, that's my target. I'm just going to hit the tree trunk. Now, if it fades a little bit, you know, maybe I hit it closer than I meant to. But if it goes exactly where I want, I would have an uphill left to right birdie putt. Now, if you want to right, an uphill right to left birdie putt, I'm talking about people that have played this golf course. They know what kind, they know where they like to putt from. You might choose a target, a different tree, just to the right of pin, right? If you get close enough and you have an 80-yard shot and you really are good with your wedges, your target can be the pin, you know? It doesn't have to be. Your desired outcome is different than your target, most often. Sometimes they are the same. The time it's the same would be like a 3-foot straight putt, all right? But as soon as you get what we've learned from aim point, if you're above the hole breaking left to right, and the green spins to 11, now your target gets closer to you and further out to the left of the hole because gravity is going to take it to the right. So your target can't be the hole. You'll miss it low right or have to hit it so hard it could go straight over the cup. Your target then, are you with me?
Yeah.
This is where people kind of get confused. Your target is that place when that place like that 9-iron. Where do you hit this ball? And you provide the energy to get it to this place, and then gravity kind of does the rest. With a driver, your target is somewhere downrange, and it's fun, you know? It can be a cloud if they're not moving. I mean, growing up, there were some guys, I mean, we were doing this stuff, and I think people do it all the time when they play. They're just not aware of it, but we were doing this stuff when we were younger. Oh, you want to hit it fast. You know, you want to hit it the power line poles, you know? And as long as you hit it that direction, you'll feed down to the right and kind of go in the fairway. Or you know that the rough, it'll land in the rough, but it's going to kick down. That's your target, the cell phone poles. Or that cloud above them. Today there's a cloud there. Tomorrow there might not be. That's why clouds aren't necessarily good to choose for targets. You know? But as long as they're there in the moment, you can choose that. Your ball's never going to hit that cloud, though. So does that answer your question about where the target would be?
Yeah, well, your mind may hit the cloud, but that's a different topic altogether.
Yes, exactly.
I like the concept of desired outcome is different than the target. You said that a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And should we not, are you saying that focus on the target and forget about the desired outcome, or is desired outcome an important part of your pre-shot routine?
Well, the desired outcome leads you to choosing a target, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You want the ball to go in the hole.
Of course.
So that's how you're going to, how am I going to get this ball to roll in the hole? So that's how you're going to choose your target. Now, let's say you go through your three-shot routine. Like I said, you can hit two on a ledge. So, you know, now we're putting, all right? Downhill left to right. We've chosen aim point also. That knowledge has helped us maybe choose a target. But really, desired outcome, you know from experience that this putt's going to go downhill to the left. And you've chosen, there's this little ball mark. That you know that if your ball just rolls over the inside edge, then it just funnels over to the hole. So now that's our target inside, you know, the inside part of this ballpark, and you're going to step in, and you have this checklist of things that help you get comfortable. Some people, you see PGA Tour players do it, you know, some people twist their hips a little bit, some people fidget with their, whatever they're doing, they do that. It's not that they're not thinking about shaking their hand. It's that they're thinking about something else. And they shake their hand when they think about that, right? And that's why they do it every time.
They use that as a trigger, or they use that to try to get their mind away from getting in that direction?
Well, you know, a lot of people that I've talked to don't know that they're doing it.
Oh, wow.
So it's not a matter necessarily of to get their mind away from something. It's just a matter of that's what helps them, that little move. That's how they double check to make sure that maybe they're, the right elbow, you know, I do some things when I'm setting up, and in my mind, I'm like, okay, my right elbow is touching, you know, my hip, and so what it looks like externally is not what it feels like internally. So what I'm doing is totally different than what people would perceive when they watch my body move, or what a camera would show me and be like, wow, why do I do that? You know, so you're stepping in, you're doing these things, and then once your checklist is, once you've done everything, and it's time to hit the ball, at that moment, you're thinking about the target, but you're looking at the ball. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like driving down the road. You know where the road is, but you can look at, you can notice a tree to the left, or you're like, oh, there's a lake, and you look away from the road. But you don't jerk the wheel over and run off the road. You stay on the road, you know, and keep traveling. You just, for a second. That's what looking at the ball should be like. The ball's there, but that's not where your mind goes. The mind stays on the target. Your eyes come to the ball and notice it for a second so you can do your stroke. Other people have said this. They've said trace with your eyes, you know, from the hole back to the ball. And as soon as your eyes get to the ball, it's time to hit your stroke. That's what they mean.
Yeah, isn't that Jeff Mangum who says that on putting?
Yeah.
Because I've done that for years. I will trace the line from the hole back to my ball. And as soon as my eyes get to the ball, I'm pulling off the stroke. Yeah.
There you go, dude. And then all I'm saying is fine and good and do that. And that's externally what it may look like. And then target-oriented golf, Colin, has found that you can control your brain waves and get in the zone. If in your mind, when you're looking at that ball, once your eyes get to that ball, you're thinking about your target. And you can only think about it if you saw it. If you can't think about it, that means you didn't see it. And that's when you see tour guys back out. You come back out, and you're like, oh, didn't even see my target. What is my target? And you use that voice, you know, that goes through your head. Just control it. Either you control it, or it's going to control you. And use that voice to talk about your target to yourself. You can say it out loud if you want, but if you're around people, you just do it internally and inside your head. And you're like, okay, that's five. Just think I left that spot. Set my club down. Okay, is the club point? Yep, the club's pointing at the spot. My hands where, you know, yeah, hands are good. Elbow's good. There's my checklist, and then inside left of that spot, there's the ball, stroke. And ball will go inside left of that spot, funnel into the hole, and now you got your desired outcome. Now, you just ask, we're not worried about desired outcome. If you did everything, and you're happy with doing everything, you did everything that you can control, and you rolled it over the inside left, maybe you misread, you could misread it, that happens, or maybe it hits something. So if the ball doesn't go in the hole, there's no point in getting angry and mad and letting it affect your next shot or affect your day. Just notice that you misread it. And you can say, did I hit it too hard? Did I not hit it? You know, something. Do I need to adjust my target today? Maybe greens are slower. You can't control these things. Superintendent didn't mow the greens today. They're slower. Just notice that. If they're slower, you know, some people change you can change the weights before the round. But the easiest thing to do is just change your target. And on an uphill putt, pretend the hole's further up the hill than it currently is. And then you hit it as if the hole's behind
the actual hole, so the hole's behind, you know, it's 3 feet up the hill, you're going to hit 3 feet behind it, and the ball will just go in. And you, then you don't have to worry about it. And if you show up and the greens are faster, you bring your target closer to you. So all of a sudden you have a, maybe you have a 10-footer, and the greens are faster than you're used to playing on. You're playing some course you haven't played before. Bring the target closer to you. You know? In your mind.
Yeah.
Now there's a hole that's just closer to you. That's it.
Now, what about on target-oriented golf, and I'm going to want to talk about aim-point putting too, but on target-oriented golf, the post-shot routine, where do you incorporate target-oriented golf in your post-shot?
Well, lots of people, oh, that's very important. That's a good question.
Thank you.
You have to get feet. In order to get better, you must get feedback. So you've got to watch where the ball went. All right? You've got to know where the ball goes in relation to your target. And then it helps me to think about the sensations I had when I was swinging, okay? And then did I get the desired outcome? No, you got some outcome. It may not be the desired outcome, but those sensations led to that result. You accept that result, get feedback, and then go to your next shot. And that's what's great about the range. But you can use the range just to send projectiles down this field. Or you can go to the range and work on your desired outcome and think about the target and feel. And golf really is just feeling and imagination.
Now let's move over to aim point.
Sure.
How did you get started with that? What is it about it that you like, and how has it made you or the person you're caddying, carrying for, you're looping for, how does it make them better?
Well, really aim point, Mark Sweeney has done a good job just having a systematic way. It's just physics,
mm-hmm.
you know, of the ball rolling, friction, and that generates break, so side hill. And then he has a chart, you know, that he's developed, and you can just look at the numbers, and the gist of it is downhill is a tightrope. So downhill is speed sensitive and aim sensitive. So I akin it to a tightrope, or you have this fine line. If you hit it a little bit too hard, it might not go in. You hit it a little bit too easy, it's not going to go in. And uphill is a funnel. You have wider margin for error, right? And basically, that's what I'm going, you know, to work on a little bit today is just, you know, the express read. But basically, JD likes my opinion when we're reading greens. We read greens together. So we've got to have some sort of way to communicate. And we use, you know, I'm using target-oriented golf to communicate the line I'm seeing. But basically, we just, you know, as greens get faster, you play more break. Downhill ball, it takes longer for the ball to get to the hole because you don't put as much energy into it. If you put the same amount of energy into it, the ball will, you know, roll straight over the hole and just keep going off the green. So you already know that that's not what we're going to do. So you just keep bringing it back. And basically, you're trying to get the ball to roll about 8 inches past the hole. That's just the speed that makes the hole the biggest. The more you can get, we said earlier for amateur golfers, the more you can have those uphill shots from left or right of the hole. I mean, think you're just pouring the ball into the hole, you know? It's just going to go in all day. You have wider margin for error, chip shots. I could take you to the green and drop balls around and say, you know, statistically, you're going to miss. This is going to be very difficult. It's speed sensitive and line sensitive. Now, there's, you know, studies that show that downhill putts are more likely to make. But that's skewed because you're more likely to get a downhill putt through the hole. So if it never gets there, it never goes in. Well, that's true, but you want to tap in all day or do you want to be grinding out six-footers? You know what I'm saying?
Tap in, please.
Tap in.
Tap.
So
yeah.
Just dye it down through the hole, play more breaks. So that's and just communicating that and just working with the speed. So
are you one of those guys that when you're looking at your putts, you're thinking, okay, you know, one ball outside the cup, or are you looking at the line that it's going to take and you're looking at on the break, you're looking at where the apex of that break is and you're trying to follow that line?
It's weird for me, and you know, so
I always, since I've been playing golf, I start to see this like dark green. It's like darker green. It looks like a shadow almost. Hard to, my imagination does it. So it, to me, it's there. I see this line that goes through the hole, and it bends. And it's darker green, usually darker in shade. And it's the width of the hole. It comes all the way back to the ball for me. And then just incorporating, you know, aim point shows me how, you know, if I walk in and it's 4% slope, and I can feel that in my feet by where my center of gravity goes when I step in. I read greens with my feet a lot on tour to help, JB. And we have books on tour that have the amount of slope and everything. So anything around 2% is pretty flat. When you start getting 2.5%, 3%, to feel that in your feet. And so if I walk in and I'm like, and I look at the book and it's like 4%, and then we're on a 90-degree angle to the hole, so we're hole high, basically, which everybody wants to be hole high. You never actually want to be hole high. Below the hole would be way better. You know that this putt's going to break, you know, as much on his chart. Just know that it's going to break as much as it can, whether the seed is 11, you know, 14, or 8. It doesn't matter. It's going to break a lot. So you just need to look a little higher. So now I'm seeing, I'm looking backwards. 4%, we're on a 9, it's going to probably come in from somewhere top of the hole. Now I'm in my line out that way. Does that make sense? So I see a dark shadow. And then there might be something on my little shadow, target-wise, there's that ball mark again, or there's a piece of sand or something that my ball maybe not roll over, but I'm going to start at that line. And it becomes a straight putt. It's setting up, and I'm going to putt it straight up at that target. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
So I incorporate maybe everything because I really feel like everybody's describing, you know, the same thing. But I use everything I've learned to kind of guide my – I play so much golf, I just start seeing these dark lines, and I'm using the knowledge I'm currently learning to help me adjust that line. But really, it all started with even before it's called target-oriented golf. I mean, that's how kids are learning to play it. They're already doing it, children, when they play.
Right. How much golf do you get to play?
Yeah, I haven't played very much this year, but it's weird because I'm playing less golf, but just from learning target-oriented golf, I mean, I really feel like I'm getting better and better without playing golf.
Wow.
So that's a new experience for me. I used to feel like I had to hit balls for 2 weeks before I'd just get back to where I was. I never felt like I was getting any better. Now I feel like I don't touch a club for 4 weeks and come home. I mean, A, I'm enjoying it more. My wife has started playing. What we talk about with target-oriented golf, she is playing better. She's broken 50, and she's probably only played 20 times.
She's broken what?
So that's remarkable. She broke 50 on 9 holes.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, from the ladies' tees, you know? But, I mean...
We'll call those the front tees.
The front tees, thank you. Yeah, you're right.
Let's not be sexist.
Yeah, you're right.
Because I know guys that should be playing the front tees, but they're like, now they're the ladies' tees. Shut up. You still can't shoot par. Just play there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and again, 80% of your shots are coming from within 100 yards anyway.
Right.
You know, so that's irrelevant. It's basically like, do you want to hit a 7-iron into the screen or a 4-iron or maybe, you know, as you move back in, maybe it's a wood. So if you have a wood you like to hit, you might as well play the back tee. Your driver,
right?
And your wood.
Nobody wants to hit a 4-iron to the green. that's painful.
Right.
So, is there a like a secret society of caddies that you guys have this little club going on, or because you're buddies with JB, you guys just hang together the whole time and keep to yourselves? Or are there things that you know that you do with other caddies?
No, I mean, I'm not a, you know, I hang out with, you know, other caddies just depending on who is going to be at each event. Some guys, you know, there's points in the year where I'm maybe going to a gym each week and working out, so there's caddies that maybe I'll see at the gym. But pretty much I hang out alone or with JB, some with Patrick Sherry, who caddies for Troy Madison. We've stayed together sometimes, but mostly I'm by myself with JB, or sometimes my wife and little boy come.
Mm-hmm. Now your boy's getting old now. He's going to start going to school. That's going to make it tough.
Yeah, he's been going to school so through the year. You know, we do the best we can with what obstacles come up. So
sure.
Golf helps us understand that too.
So now during a round or during a weekend when you guys are playing and you're paired up with the same guy for a couple of days. What goes on between the caddies then? Are you guys communicating? You have little side bet. Oh, I don't want to use the word bets, you know, you know, because you probably can't. But you got little games going on that you play between yourselves?
Yeah, no, I've never had any side bets or anything like that going on. We've not played, you know, any sort of games. I mean, we might talk, you know, and there might be a couple minutes we'll all be sitting on a tee waiting, and somebody will tell us a story or something, you know, so that's been fun. But mostly it's just, you know, you get in the moment and you're working on, you do everything the exact same to help you get into that zone. So we're just in there trying to get in the zone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so just as far, you know, if we help each other rate bunkers if somebody's kind of into some trouble or something, you know, and try to help in that regard, getting the pin, wiping each other, the player's ball off on the green, you know, if they just come out of the bunker and things like that. But no real, you know, secret society or anything like that. We mostly, there's so much money involved, you know, these days. We don't even travel together. I heard in years past, lots of caddies traveled together and drove together, but, you know, anymore, it's just, the game has changed so much money is involved. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So you're competing too.
I mean, yeah, in a sense, really the name of our game is how good can you get your player to play, really? You know what I mean? That's just it.
So you're a coach coaching.
That's what you are. You know, you're basically a coach. Some days a player needs something, you know, maybe a little bit different. They need it phrased a little bit different way. They need more motivation. Some days they need less motivation. You know, some days it's just reading your guy, which is great for me. I mean, JB and I grew up together. I mean, we really know each other, and we just try to really use that to our advantage, you know?
That's so interesting. Are there things that you do that would help us? Like the first thing that comes to mind is like, I've never been a big fan of tossing a couple blades of grass in the air to tell me what's going on with the wind. A, I have trouble finding where the grass went when it does.
Yeah.
But it also, I find that tossing grass, okay, the wind is blowing in that direction, but it's not telling me,
yeah,
is the wind swirling? Is it going, you know, hard left to right? Is it, you know, are there other things that you have found that work for you or you've seen other caddies do that...
That's what I do every day. I just check the forecast for the wind. There's a couple different sites. I might use the Weather Channel on it, and so it says, you know, south southeast, you know. And then there's another app I use. You're not allowed to use it during tournament play, but it's just at, you know, the beginning of the day, Primos Wind gives you a wind direction and gives you the exact direction, like 240 degrees. You know, so if you want, like I'm a caddy, I'll use a compass. Most people aren't going to use a compass. So if you just know it's south-southwest and you figure out which way south-southwest is. And when I'm playing at home now, just from being a caddy and my experiences, I know that in general the wind comes from south-southwest. When I'm at home playing in Campbellsville, you know, it shifts. In the morning it's in, so it's like an opposite direction. And then at about 2 o'clock it's south-southwest. So it's fun for me because I can hit really far downwind on a few of these par four holes. So I like, you know, I just like those holes, so I like to play at about that time so I can catch that wind. It's like being a surfer. I don't surf, but I've talked to surfers, and they do the same thing with catching waves. I'm just doing it with wind.
Hmm. And so, what is the app again?
Primos, Primos, Primos Wind.
Okay, good. We'll remember to put that in the show notes. And do you, you said you use a compass. Are you allowed to have one on the course during?
Yeah, we're allowed. They changed that. We're allowed. And I've checked. I couldn't believe it, so I keep checking and asking. And they get tired of me asking. But yeah, we're allowed to use a compass during the round. I've seen some caddies, you know, at Bay Hill, there was a guy using a compass. So, you know, I use a compass just in general, south-southwest. And then if you feel a swirl when you're playing, so you're throwing up grass, you're seeing these swirls. So you throw up grass one time and it's blowing it to the left, and then you throw it up again, it's blowing it to the right. But if you know it's generally supposed to be down, unless you look at the treetops and everything is moving where the trees are the same direction, you can just tell a lot by the treetops and just notice. And then noticing how much of the tree is moving. If it's just the leaves, you don't have a lot of wind to worry about. And if you strike a golf ball well, the wind's not really going to affect it anyway. But if you're seeing, you know, the branches closer to the trunk start to move, you know, you're talking about some major wind. So you might want to play. If you're trying to get to that spot, you know, whether it's chipping or putting or whatever, there below the hole in that funnel. That's what you're trying to do.
And is the flag helpful at all?
I mean, you can. I just think if you're looking at the treetops, because unless you're going to hit your golf ball flag high all the way there, right? Like, if you're looking up, if you have trees around, but if you don't have any trees around, then yeah, you can look at the flag and you see it 150 yards or 200 yards away. If it's blowing straight down and where you're standing, it feels like it's blowing straight in, you know? In general, I would play what the flag's doing, because that's where the ball is losing speed. When it comes off the face, it has all the speed, so the wind's not really affecting it where you're standing anyway. It's when the ball loses speed that the wind starts to move it around.
Have you ever noticed if anybody in the gallery is maybe smoking and you can see what the smoke is doing as it's coming off their cigarette or their cigar?
I'm looking at all of that. Smoking, if the clubhouse, we're by the clubhouse, and you know that maybe they have a chimney with their cooking, I'm watching that smoke. I'm watching the American flag. You know, the stadium seats sometimes have flags. I'm looking at all of those. You know, comparing, feeling what it feels like to me. It's hit me in the face or coming off the right, checking, you know, just the wind direction. We have a compass drawn in our book, so that's an easy way. I don't actually have to pull out a compass unless I want the exact 240 degrees. If I want to say, oh, it's helping off the right. But in general, you can look at the compass that I have drawn in the book. But most people don't even know which way their golf course is turned. So just getting familiar with that would help people a lot.
Sure, sure.
You know? Because, I mean, it sounds like you're not talking about people that play different places all the time, but just going out to your normal club. Like, hey, do you know that, you know, is this hole generally when you play, is it downwind off the right, you know, or, you know, lots of different things. You know, playing before a storm is, you know, if there's a storm coming in, your golf ball's going to go really far. You know, like, you're playing just up until they blow the horn or there's lightning or you don't know if the storm's going to hit or miss, you know, but the temperature drops. I mean, you've been playing before and that happened, right?
Yeah.
Well, the golf ball goes further. So if normally you hit a 7-iron, you know, from maybe 150 yards or, you know, I don't know how far you hit a 7-iron, you might want to bump it down to an 8, you know, especially if the play is to be short. That's the first question. Do I want to be long or short here? Do I want to be long or short? And then you can make an assessment from there. If there's a storm coming in, your 8-iron is going to go pretty far because the barometric pressure tends to drop, you know?
Hmm.
So... Crazy stuff, but...
Yeah, well, you and JB grew up in the South, so you're very used to humid weather, I would think.
Right.
Do you maybe perhaps carry some talcum or some baby powder in your bag so that you can keep your hands a little drier, and then when you clap your hands and to get the powder off, you'll see a little puff of that blowing around.
You know, that's smart. There's lots of different things.
I wonder if you kept some talcum powder in your bag to do that, to dry off his hands, if somebody would, like, no, that's illegal. You can't use it. It's like, what am I? I'm drying my hands, dude. Leave me alone, you know?
Yeah, we would check everything. If we make any changes to our routine, you're basically just talking about a change in routine. So
right.
Anything that we're going to shift, we're going to make sure that, you know, we're going to check with the rules committee at the beginning of the week to make sure that that's okay. He uses a rain grip for the exact reason, that black grip that he uses, you know, basically it's because of the humidity and everything.
Interesting.
You don't go through those leather grips as fast. This material that they make the rain grips out of, which is smart, and you don't have to change grips throughout the day. Gloves.
How many gloves in a weekend will he go through?
One a day.
Really?
Like he's one a day. Just a new glove each day. Yeah.
Huh.
And let's see.
Well, listen. I want you to really, if you like this idea, I want you to consider having some talcum with you. And if he uses it, when he slaps his hand, well, look over to a camera and wink, and then we'll know. We'll know that it was from us.
Yeah. Well, and then, so the other thing, now we're, you know, in this day and age, everybody has some form of technology, whether it's on their watch or a rangefinder, you know, for a GPS, whatever it is they use. Just start some sort of note of how far your golf ball actually goes. That'll help people out so much, because if you ask somebody, well, how far does your 7-iron, how far is your 7-iron? They'll say a general number like, you know, 155, whatever, 160, some people, 180, whatever. Well, when you start playing, and when you do hit, let's say it first hole you hit driver, then hit a 5-iron. At 200 yards, I hit a 5-iron. I had 200 to the pin, and I have a ball mark next to the hole. It flew 200 yards. It probably didn't. It flew more like 190, and I was trying to be short. So just try to notice, and then write that down, like 5-iron, 190. That's the biggest difference that tour guys have, that, well, they have a caddy, so that's one of the things I do. I write down how far he hits every shot, how far the ball flew in the air. So even in the fairway, if I can find a ball mark where his driver landed, and we had 325 to cover a bunker, and it covered about 10 steps, I knew that ball flew 335, and I write down driver flew 335. You know, and then we know if it's running out, how did it run out? 20 yards? Did it run out 30 yards? Like, what is the ball generally doing? The name of the game is moving your golf ball around this course. So knowing how far you hit it is very important, and people don't.
Yep. Very important. Very important. Yeah. There's a product out now. There's a product out now called Game Golf that I know that. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I saw it. I just couldn't understand why you wouldn't just write it down.
Well, I'll tell you. It's interesting because I know that Lee Westwood, Graham McDowell, and now Jim Furyk are using it. I actually played golf with the CEO of the company last week, and I did a video that's going to be coming up, and an episode's going to be coming up with him soon. For me, writing down, I don't have the wherewithal to write down every shot and what, how far it went and what it did. But when I use this thing and I take it off at the end of the round and I plug it into my computer, it gives me all that information and it gives me statistics. It's really helped my game, and where it's helped my game more is showing me where my holes are in my game and what I should be working on. I think it's a great product.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that soon in the upcoming episodes. Hey, Brandon, I this has been a long time. I know you've got to get back on the road because you got things to do. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, enjoy talking. So anytime.
Thank you. And best of luck to you and JB. Safe travels, of course. Have a great time at the Open Championship. And I would love to catch up with you maybe after the season. Maybe we can try to get together again and hear how things went for you.
Yeah, thanks so much. It was a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for having me on your show.
Frankly, if given the opportunity to talk to a PGA Tour player, well, of course, I wouldn't turn it down. That would be awesome. But for great stories and insights, there's something about talking to caddies that I really enjoy. I love digging in and getting answers from the heart versus, you know, these tour players, they have these standard answers they have to give, and they're asked the same question 47 times a day. So that you can get that elsewhere, I promise. But caddies, different story. He talked about this app, Primos Wind, that he uses to check wind speed and direction. It's designed primarily for hunting and is 99 cents and iPhone only at this point. Now, there is more to Golf Smarter than just this podcast. There are videos, a global conversation going on Facebook, and we're on Twitter at Golf Smarter, hashtag Sound Advice. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for me, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.